certainly know how to compliment a woman. Hell, if you'll excuse me.
Do you know who I am?
No, I can't say that I do.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
Really?
People know me.
Well, I'm very happy for you.
I'm very important. I have many leather-bound books, and my apartment smells of rich mahogany.
Okay, and are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy. Please start.
And so I started.
This is Mayor Rick Kreisman, and you're listening to the Homemade Broadcast.
Personnel, this is CBTS. Space vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Homemade Broadcast, HMB Radio, on Radio St. Pete. How are you? This is the Homemade Broadcast. I am your host, as always, Will Koontz. How in the heck are you? I certainly hope that you are well. I'm good. I'm fine. Feeling a little sick. There's certain things you have to accept in this life, which is that if you buy chicken strips from the clearance section of Winn-Dixie, you're going to feel a little sick. That is your cross to bear. And boy, do I ever feel sick right now. I got this salad thing and chicken strips. Salad was $2. Chicken strips. Got like 8 of them for $2. I should have known better. Went ahead and purchased those things. Anyway, ate them. Immediately felt sick. So, yeah. But I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm holding it together. When I was getting the salad, it says, hey, you get a free packet of dressing with your salad. Oh, do I? That is kind of you. That is really kind. So I'm digging through the dressings. Let's see. I just want some blue cheese to go with these chicken strips and this salad. Where's blue cheese? Nothing. Vinaigrette? No. French? Barf? No thanks. And that's pretty much all they had was the vinaigrette and the French. So I approached an employee, and the first guy I asked had no idea. I don't know. You got to ask them over there. All right. I'll do that. So I marched on over to the other fellas in the deli. Hey, guys. How are you? Good afternoon. I was hoping to maybe track down a blue cheese. Is that all the dressings you have in your little pot there? And the guy says, oh, whatever we have out is out. I know we have blue cheese and Greek. That's about it. You literally have everything but those two things. And he kind of looked puzzled for a moment. And then just said, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. All right. Fair enough. I appreciate the honesty, though, frankly. I mean, the guy just, he didn't know. I don't know what to tell you. And I don't know where to get it. So fine. So I went back and used ranch. Still delicious. It did the job, certainly. Anyways, so we got some events coming up here in the next few weeks. We're going to be broadcasting live on November 28th. Beginning at 3 p.m.-ish, somewhere around there. We might start a little earlier, a little later. I don't know. We'll be right in front of the Sly Bar area. It's the Don't Stop St. Petersburg 2015 in the Grand Central District of St. Petersburg. They're going to be roping off some sections, and they're going a full lineup of local music, man. It's an all-day thing. They got 3-4 stages, I think. And also the Homemade Broadcast will have a comedy showcase there beginning at 7:45 from till 8:20, I believe. And we're going to have some really great comics on there. Justin Cupo, one of my favorites. James Bailey, host of my mom's favorite podcast on HMB Radio. Cam Bertrand, my man. Rio Paris, who I met once, and I've only heard really great things. He won one of the Best of the Bay Awards for up-and-coming comedians, as well as Amanda Jordan. She also did the same. Very funny young lady. She did the Bends Don't Break show with us. And one of my favorite people in the whole planet John Jacobs. MTV's John Jacobs will be there. I believe he's going to come out, do some man on the street type of stuff for me too while we are live broadcasting out there. In front of Sly Bar, tickets, I think, are $10. Only 10 bucks in advance, $12 day of show. You can find out more information and buy your tickets at don'tstopstpete.com. You can just get your $10 ticket, get in for all the acts performing. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be on the Tropicool bus. I guess they're going to make that little area a stage, and people are going to tell jokes on there. Full lineup. I'm looking at it now. It's crazy how many bands they got planned. I didn't know there's this many bands here. But, yeah, there definitely is. And then coming up on December 4th, we're going to have partnering up with my buddy Todd Smith over at Winesmith for the Winesmith and Homemade Broadcast Art Show in benefit of Hannah's Homeless. Lisa does really good work with the homeless around here. She, whenever I give away clothes, I make sure I give them to her because she actually puts them on people's backs as opposed to putting them in a thrift shop and selling them for a profit, which then part of that goes in somebody else's pocket. She's working really hard. She does this. She's got her little organization that she pretty much does herself. I know she's got some people helping her out, but she does really great work around the city for the homeless here, and we're really grateful to be helping her out, and we definitely appreciate her work. That is at Winesmith, 1620 Central Avenue here in St. Petersburg. That is December 4th. Show begins at 6 p.m. We're going to have great local artists, including Blue Lucy's Chad Mize. Derek Donnelly is going to be there. Tracy Tanner is going to be doing some clay work. Julie Brookins, James Blevins, Vanessa Culver, and myself. If I could finish my damn piece in time, if I can find some time to actually do it, that would be terrific. But I'm going to have a piece hanging up there too. I'm a jack of all trades, got my hands in a lot of honeypots here. That sounded dirty, and I didn't mean for it to. But that's free, and all the wine sales, I believe a large portion goes to Hannah's Homeless, as well as the artwork that gets sold, a portion is going to go to her as well. So come out, buy some art, get some wine from Todd. And it's going to be fun, man. 6 p.m. That's starting out. So, this podcast is brought to you by Sly Bar. Our good buddies at Sly Bar love Sly Bar. Good beers, good food. One of the top 15 businesses to watch in 2015, according to I Love the Berg. They just keep blowing up, man. They're doing their thing, and I'm happy to be working with them because they are becoming a special part of the St. Petersburg community. Joe and Lauren down there, killing it. Got something going on every day down there, something neat. 2061 Central Avenue, slybar.com is their website. Check them out. Go grab a beer one day. They got really great beers on tap. And Angelo's. Angelo's provides a pizza for us at the open mics, 536 First Avenue North. And saintpizza.com is their website. The next open mic is this coming Tuesday, which would be the 24th, yes, I believe, and that is the day before my birthday. I'm going to be 31 friggin' years old. I cannot believe it. This year, it's true. Once you hit 30, the rest of it doesn't matter. Birthdays don't matter anymore. I really don't care. But it'd be nice to have people come out and laugh with us for the open mic. It begins around 9 p.m. I put the list out around 8. It's free to watch, free to perform. We got the pizza, like I said, for free, and then we got a $50 cash prize, courtesy of Sly Bar. And Lando, who is the bartender, good buddy of mine, he provides 10 bucks out of his own tip jar for the second place winner of the open mic, and he buys the third place contestant a beer. So you got a good chance of walking away with something, and maybe, you know, 50 bucks. If you always wanted to do comedy and, you know, kick an idea around, this is a good place to do it. It won the Best of the Bay Award for best place to watch comics get better. I couldn't agree more. It is a great place, and it's got a real sense of community there. It's a weird stage, but it is always a blast. So come out to that this 24th, Sly Bar 2061 Central Avenue, and hang out with us. It's going to be fun. And if you want to get a hold of the show, if you're interested in talking to me for some reason, you're able to do that. You can call the Homemade Broadcast voicemail, 813-693-2124. And also, you can email me at thehomemadebroadcast, all spelled out, at radiosaintpete.com. make sure you check out James Bailey's My Mom Favorite Podcasts as we build this HMB radio network. We've got some more shows coming. James had on Jander Gray and Dave Hines from Kava Comedy. They got a comedy collective that they run down at Bula Cafe. And it's always a lot of fun to have those guys in there. Jander runs a podcast called World Domination Through Compromise. So make sure you check that out. So today, this week on the show, we have a guy I'm really excited about. I've seen this guy on television from when I was a little kid. And he is going to be in studio, a longtime broadcaster here in the Tampa Bay area. Brendan McLaughlin is going to be here. He works at ABC. And I think, I don't know what time slot he's on still, but I know he's definitely doing it. So he'll be here any minute, and we will get to talk to Brendan McLaughlin. So through the beauty of radio, we'll be right back with Brendan McLaughlin. Reginald Roundtree, welcome to the Homemade Broadcast.
Good try. Just because this is radio doesn't mean you can't see me, because yes, we're in the same room.
That was actually your beginning bit, and that cracked me up sitting behind you. Because he's like, it's pretty much, he's the most, I think, recognizable face in broadcast TV, I think, in the Tampa Bay area. You're number two. You're right behind him.
That's okay. No, I'm an average, sort of man on the street look. I don't lay claim to any distinctive appearance. But, no, I wanted to start that way because I didn't know if I was just going to fall on my flat on my face at the open mic comedy night. So just in case, I could have plausible deniability and blame it on Reggie.
Sure, sure. And I guess I should mention that's how I met Brendan, was he came out to the open mic with his improv group. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I would love to talk to this guy because I've seen you on TV since I was a little kid. And you were nice enough to come in, so I definitely appreciate that.
Glad to be invited. Happy to do it.
Yeah, man. So what made you get involved in, I guess, improv is your main thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just joined a class about, I don't know, 8 months ago. And just coincidentally, not ironically, because a lot of people misuse that word, coincidentally, mm-hmm. the teacher was my kid's teacher. In middle school and high school.
Oh, really?
He was the drama teacher at their school.
Uh-huh.
So he's no longer there. He's now doing teaching adult classes primarily. So so I joined this group of about 15 people. We meet every Tuesday night, and it's just plain fun. It's just like your face hurts at the end of the night from laughing so much. But at the same time, it's kind of challenging. As you well know, it's different than stand-up.
Oh, yeah.
Improv, in a way, is... It's harder in its own way.
Sure.
And it just requires you to really step out on that tightrope and not be afraid to fall. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I find it to be a lot of fun. And I don't know if it's going to lead anywhere, but it's fun while we're doing it.
Was it have you always been interested in comedy? Or
I've been a consumer, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I consume a lot of comic podcasts. I watch a lot of comedy. I go out to see live comedy with my wife. In fact, my wife and I grew up in San Francisco, California, at a time when comedy was really a big deal.
Yeah. The 80s were like prime time.
It really was. So there was a place called The Other Cafe a few doors down from my apartment. And, Seinfeld, Dana Carvey, Robin Williams would drop in and
just try
some material.
San Francisco?
He lived in San Francisco. He lived in Mill Valley just across the bridge. And so there were a lot of comics that lived there. Bobby Slayton was a regular, who's practically the house comic. So that's while we were dating, that's what we did. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I'll think of the guy's name. I think his name was Rick Reynolds. And we were sitting sort of in the front row on one of our earlier dates. And so he just picked us out of the audience and he said, got our names, Brendan and Sandy. He said, Brendan, if you had to choose and you had to make a choice, one or the other, would you rather have your wife lose an eye, like have just her eye taken out with like a pen, or have the word pork tattooed on her forehead?
Ooh.
That's your choice.
That's an interesting choice. I wonder if that was improv or he had that planned out.
I don't know. It sounded a little planned out, but I just from then on, I was like, hey, this is too fun.
So what did you choose?
I didn't. I just giggled like an idiot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then he asked me, he goes, would you rather eat a quart of boogers or a pint of maggots? I think it was the other choice. So
Got to go with the maggots, free protein. You never turn down
protein. I
think
so, yeah. I go with the maggots, yeah.
Definitely. So I did a little bit of research about you, very little, because I always fly by the skin of my teeth on this thing.
That sounds like an excuse, Will.
It is. It is. I should be better at preparing, but I also like the format of, I don't know what's going to happen, so you can't...
Sure. Yeah, my Wikipedia entry is pretty sparse.
Well, I found your ABC News bio, yeah. And the thing that really stuck out at me mm-hmm. was that you were at 29. Is that correct? You got into...
That's correct. I think I was the oldest intern at KPIX TV in San Francisco, yeah.
Uh-huh. So were you in school then, or did you just go in?
I was in jail, mostly. I spent a lot of time up the river, so to speak.
Sure.
No. I guess what I studied business. I was a business major, which didn't mean anything to me at the time. I just sort of picked it, just mm-hmm. for lack of knowing what I wanted to do. It seemed like a prudent choice in college.
Sure.
I had no particular interest or aptitude for business, so what I did was I waited tables and bartended while I went to school, and then when I graduated, I just continued to do that.
Mm-hmm,
and,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, in the Bay Area, it was a good living, you know. It was a time when Alice Waters in Berkeley opened her Chez Panisse restaurant. Jeremiah Tower was in San Francisco. It was really this renaissance of restaurants, and I was a pretty qualified waiter. So I had some good gigs. That's how I met my wife, and we had a couple kids and everything. But the point came where, you know, people kept asking me as I would come to the table and, you know, establish a little rapport with the customers. You know, they go, well, what do you do besides this, or what are you gonna do? You know, and that question always grated at me because I thought, you know what, hey, this is a profession.
So some Burns people make like $100,000 a year. I heard. So.
I was making bank and very short hours, long money, short hours.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I knew that this. You know, I didn't want to be the 45-year-old guy waiting tables. So.
Sure.
So I went back to school and took some broadcasting courses. I had worked in journalism in college a little bit. I worked on the paper. So I was into writing and communication. I did like that whole idea. So I didn't know whether I wanted to do radio or TV or what. But I did get this internship at a radio station, and I worked there. And no offense, because I know radio is your thing, but, man, it just didn't click.
Yeah,
I found it really hard and kind of nerve-wracking. And so I switched over to television. I got a TV interview, and I went, man, yeah, this is my place, just because it was just raucous. You know, the TV station has got 100 people in it, and people are chain-smoking and cursing, and it was just kind of wild and fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of hooked. But, yeah, the problem was I was 29, which wasn't really a problem. It was actually an asset.
Yeah.
Because I was kind of a grown-up, you know?
Right.
I was an immature 29-year-old, but still, at 22, too, I was a blithering idiot, so I don't think I could get dressed to go to a job, a real job. So it kind of worked out. So I did that for about a year, and I got my first job on the air in Austin, Texas. I just put out a bunch of resumes, and that's who bit. And mm-hmm. At the time, I went, oh, man, what a disaster, Austin, Texas. And then people quickly wised me up and said, no, you don't understand. Austin's pretty cool.
There,
yeah, it's a great town, and we did have a great time there.
Yeah. So we kind of parallel there because I also went to school for business because I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Bam.
Now, I immediately, after two semesters, was like, nope, I'm bouncing.
Mm-hmm.
I failed most of my classes.
Okay.
But and then I did.
With
dignity. Yeah, barely, if you want to call it that, sure. And then I went and just said, look, give me, because I was already like $25,000 in debt at this point. And I was like, I have to get that piece of paper just to justify that amount of money.
Sure.
Now I ended up tacking on some to that. But I was just like, just give me whatever. Whatever you want that will get me out of here quickest. And they said, well, you can just do English. Well, I speak English, so yeah, that sounds fine. So I did that, and then I kind of went through this phase of, oh, what am I going to do now? And I started to think about what I wanted to do when I was younger, and I remember playing radio DJ a lot. But then I was out of school. I couldn't get an internship at this point. I applied to radio stations, but good luck, you know, and I found that out. I had some, you know, I met people, and they set me up with, you know, contacts. Just wasn't able to get into a station. So then I started doing the podcasting, and that was the great thing about being in this time is with the internet, you can really do whatever you want. So I started doing that, and then I found Radio St. Pete, and then they were really welcoming and brought me in. And so now I'm here. So I'm going to be 31 next week. So I found it I was like, oh, whew. Yeah. It was like a weight off my shoulders, you know, like if this guy did it, I could do it too.
You know? No, I do. I do tell people that they should not sweat it, that it's not unusual. And really, you know, statistically, you're going to have not three or four jobs. You're going to have three or four careers in your life.
Right.
And that's not unusual at all. So, you know, my point is, what's the hurry? You know, of course you want to make progress in your life and you want to find something that doesn't feel like work, you know?
Yes, exactly.
And I think that's the goal. So, yeah, I think you're going about it just the right way. Is you just take what you can get at the time, use the technology that's out there, and just do it. And that's what you're doing. You're just doing it instead of waiting for somebody to come and, you know, invite you in.
Yeah, and I find a lot of my peers are waiting for something to happen. Now, luckily I'm in a friend group that all my friends are very successful. I'm kind of like the black sheep of my friends. But I think I'll catch up eventually. I'm just a little behind. But a lot of people that aren't doing much I don't know, it's the entitlement of people my age, what it is. I had a girl today. I said, hey, I'm broadcasting from this event. Come out, you know, help me out. I haven't heard from Joe in a while, and I got to go. I'm going to the football game. So
yeah, I think it's fear.
You think?
Yeah, I do. I think it's fear that keeps people from putting themselves out there for fear. It's natural, you know, fear of rejection.
Yes, yeah.
If I go ahead and make myself vulnerable and try to do something I don't know anything about, I may not be good at, I'm going to fall on my face, I'm going to fail, and I'll be, you know, banished to the island for misfit toys.
Yeah.
But it does, you know, it doesn't work out that way. I mean, there are all kinds of cliches around this that I won't throw at anybody because they're nauseating, but this is why I'm here tonight. It's my overall policy of saying yes to stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is very important. I found too. Yeah, I don't say no to much of anything anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have to leave yourself open and seize opportunities. And I, as you said, when you were 22, you were dumb. And I was dumb until maybe about a year ago, I consider myself. So
happy anniversary.
Thank you. Yes, I'm getting there. I have a theory that I say it all the time. People are probably sick of hearing it, but you don't become a human being until you're about 26 years old.
I'm with you on that. I mean, it that must sound pathetic to an earlier generation who went off to war at 17 to fight Germans in Europe, or even earlier than that. Alexander the Great, I think, was a teenager right when he conquered most of the known world. But hey, that's not the society we live in. In our society, you're right. I think it takes about 26 years for your brain to get medium rare to medium.
So did you want to do news necessarily, or did you kind of fall into news broadcasting?
Yeah, it's interesting because this, not to dwell on this internship too much, but looking back on it, it really was my big break. I didn't realize, you know, how lucky I was to get this because I was older, and long story short, after I graduated, I went in to apply for this internship and they told me, hey, what college program are you in? And I said, I'm already a graduate. And they said, you're unclear on the concept, dude. You have to be in a program.
Yeah,
so I went, oh, okay. I'll go join a program. So I went to the community college and I enrolled. And then I came back the next week with my enrollment thing. And I said, I'm in a program. And boom, I got this internship. But it was an open-ended corporate type deal where you could be in the newsroom. You could be in the sales department. You could be in production. So there were three different areas of the station that you could be an intern in. And I kind of went, wow. You know, I thought, man, maybe I'll be Don Draper. This was long before Mad Men. But, you know, I kind of had that mental picture of like a Madison Avenue cat.
Sure.
Or production might be, you know, kind of fun. But news, you know, I was always kind of a reader. And I always was kind of a news hound in a way. I was interested in it. So, yeah, I picked news. And I'm glad I did. It was the right way to go for me.
How long have you been in Tampa? Because you started in San Fran, you moved to Austin, and then was it Tampa the next stop?
No, I went to Seattle.
Oh, okay.
Seattle, Washington. I was there for 4 years in the early 90s, and worked for a tremendous TV station, King TV.
Okay.
It's what we call a blowtorch in the industry. Its ratings were just dominant, you know. And they had tons of money, and they just flew people around. They would use the helicopter if they needed to deliver a tape from Tampa or from Seattle down to, say, Olympia, the state capital, which was about a a full hour drive, maybe an hour and a half. And they would just use the helicopter to deliver a piece of tape. You know, $600, they wouldn't think twice about it. That was a different time. TV stations were minting money. But it was a great experience because I did a lot of traveling, did a lot of different kind of reporting, a lot of politics, and I was a reporter and an anchor there. So, yeah, after I was there for 4 years, this opportunity came up to be the primary anchor. And so I, you know, packed up the truck and Mammy and Pappy and the kids, and we all came out to Tampa, Florida. And at first it was, you know, it was like, whoa, what have we done here? Because it's, you know, it's a lot smaller city. We were living in a suburb, which we hadn't really done before. We're kind of city folk. And right. So it was a little bit of an adjustment, but we grew into it, you know. And, you know, my kids, you know, really thrived. And, you know, by the time I would have perhaps otherwise looked for other opportunities or gone to an even larger market or maybe back to San Francisco, we were planted here. And the kids were in, you know, early in high school, and it would have kind of sucked for them to get yanked right. out. And so, yeah, we decided to just plant our flag here, and we're very happy.
Yeah, how long has it been now?
I'm sorry, 21 years, yeah.
21 years.
I got here in December of 1994, so it'll be 21 years next month.
Wow.
I know. I didn't think I was going to be here for 5 years.
Yeah.
But, man.
What hour are you on now?
I anchor from 5:30 to 6:30. So
P.M.?
Yes, there's okay. two different half hours. They're considered two different shows, the 5:30 show and the 6 o'clock show.
Yeah.
And then during the day, I generally work on different news projects. Mm-hmm. So,
do you have a website or a blog or anything?
Nope. Yeah. No, I have a Facebook page and a Twitter account, and I'm pretty active mostly on the Facebook page.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, I'm sitting down with Brandon McLaughlin. Brandon's been around for 21 years on ABC Action News.
That's
correct, yes.
Bingo.
So how has the news business – I understand this is more of a local news and probably differs from national news. But how have you seen it change within the past 20 years?
I would say a few things. Number one, we're doing more news. We didn't have all these shows. We didn't have a weekend morning show. I don't think we didn't have a noon show for a long time. The morning show was shorter. Now we have, you know, several hours of morning newscasts.
Several hours,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And in fact, back in the day when I first got into the business, you know, there was like a 6 and 11 or
right.
6 and 10, depending on your time zone. And that was it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing much more news. Obviously, the biggest change has occurred in the last, you know, 5 years or 10 years, and that is social media and the whole online component and just the way people consume news. That being said, that's just a platform issue. You know what I mean? That's people. Okay, people are watching us on their phones, or they're watching individual stories from our newscast on their phones or their iPad or their desktop. People of your generation very rarely sit in front of the.
I don't even have
the
cable.
Old TV.
Yeah,
and pop on a local newscast. We know that. But that being said, content is still king. And what I do as a reporter and an anchor really hasn't changed that much. It's about storytelling. You know, it's about informing people what's going on in their community and doing it in a way that's interesting and engaging and informative and sometimes fun and sometimes moving. Sometimes you actually want to advocate for things to help somebody. Sometimes you want to bring somebody down, like a crooked politician.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a mission aspect to this as well. And none of that has really changed. That's always been the case. So the only thing that I've had to learn, and it's no small thing, is how to edit on Final Cut Pro and how to navigate the various social media platforms and how to do web optimization and try to get clicks and all that. So it's a significant amount of work, additional work. But again, the basic skill set of how to be a reporter or a news person is remains the same.
So the responsibility kind of lies on you as an anchor and a reporter to still, there's not people who just have a job to go find news stories or to do the websites or whatever, you're still responsible on that end.
Absolutely, yeah. And and actually coming up with story ideas is one of the most challenging things I do.
I can imagine.
I mean, everybody's expected pretty much coming in the morning to have some ideas and not something you just read on the cover of the TBT, you know, mm-hmm. walking down the street mm-hmm. That you saw in the news rack. So that's challenging. You got to work your sources, and you got to keep your eyes open and talk to people. And some of the best stories I come up with, I think, are actually things in my community. I live in the Tampa Heights, Seminole Heights area. So it's a dynamic neighborhood. There's lots of things going on. There's a lot of active, involved people. So that's always a good source of stories for me if I just keep my ears open and follow these things up.
Well, if you ever need a story about a young man with a part of an upstart radio station, I know where to find him.
Sounds like a series, maybe a three-part series.
Oh, definitely.
In prime time.
Yes, hour apiece, yeah, definitely. So is it good? Because I feel like there's not that much news, and I feel like they're trying to push things that just don't really need to be talked about, because I wasn't alive, of course, during the Cronkite days, but you would tune in at 5 o'clock or 6 or whatever it was, and he would, okay, today this happened, and then this also happened. Good night. Have a good day.
Right.
So what is the percentage of real newsworthy stuff that's being reported, and how much is just like, we need to fill this time, so we're going to throw this on?
That's a good question. I mean, first of all, you have to decide how wide you want to cast your net. You know, do you? There's local news, and we all know what local news is. That's stuff that happens here in the Tampa Bay area, or, mm-hmm. you know, or Central Florida, or you could broaden that to statewide stuff, you know. And then there's national news, and there's sort of, you know, there's plenty of that, because you multiply what we have by 50 other states,
right,
you know,
right,
so
right.
plenty of material, and then you could sort of go into the international stories and spend as much time on that as you want. Because people rely on local television news for such a big portion of their information, I mean, it's kind of appalling, but, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 80-90% of Americans get most of their news from local television. And, you know,
is that still true even today with all the internet?
It's true in terms of content that we generate, you know. Uh-huh. They may get it through the internet, but it's probably getting less so, but we're still the 600-pound gorilla. And for that reason, I think there's a sense that we need to include some of these international stories. We also need to include, a Caitlyn Jenner story there, because it's in the water, you know. It's part of what people are talking about. And
isn't it only, though, that they're talking about it because people are putting it on the news? Doesn't that have some part in it, too?
Well, it's coming from all different directions. You got TMZ, which is its own animal, and, Deadspin in the sports world and so on. So there's all kinds of, and before that, you know, National Enquirer, you know, was sort of doing that kind of celebrity-type stuff.
Right. But hard copy, I remember.
Yeah, but no, people who never watch local TV news are interested in that stuff.
Right.
It's a balancing act, Will, and I'm not saying we do it right all the time, and I'm not saying anybody has gotten it perfect. Mm-hmm. And I think in our heart of hearts, we'd love to really focus entirely on local news, entirely, you know, and that would be a niche. But again, you can't ignore the tune-in, tune-out factor, you know. People generally go to us to sort of get an overview of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It was Edward R. Murrow who observed that people watch the news to see if their world is safe. That's really the motivation. That's kind of the reptile brain motivation behind watching the news or turning on the radio or
right.
or however you're getting it. So that's the basic thing we do, and that's weather. You know, what kind of weather is coming? Did anything blow up in the neighborhood today? So that's why people check in with us. So the challenge has always been like get them to stay a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Right. So again, getting back to that mix, the best thing I think we do is long form investigative stuff. You know, that has to do with politics or consumer safety,
mm-hmm.
Because those are stories that really affect change, you know. People get in trouble, policies change, new laws get written up. Even things as simple as, TV consoles getting pulled down on kids. the cords on blinds that are strangling kids, mm-hmm. you know.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a real thing, and we feel like we have an obligation to like publicize that stuff, and because that's news that really can save a life, it can make a difference in somebody's life. So again, you blend that, you leaven that. If you did nothing but consumer product stories, you know, your audience would just walk on you. Same with crime. Same with, you know, sex or anything you wanted to sort of, you know, make your brand. Mm-hmm. Newscasts try to do that once in a while. They say, we're going to be this or we're going to be that. And they generally fall back to kind of a almost a magazine-type format, trying to have something of interest to a pretty broad audience.
Yeah, the old joke was, what you don't know could kill you.
Yes.
Coming up at 11.
Yes.
Like, no, I need to know now. If you're just joining us, I'm sitting down with Tampa Bay broadcaster Brendan McLaughlin. So my other question was, how do you keep your own bias out of a story you're working on? Because it seems to me like there's always the, oh, Fox News is right, mm-hmm. MSNBC is right, CNN somewhere in the middle. I don't know. I mean, because one of the things that frustrates me is, I'm a curious fella, and I'll go out of my way to actually research things that I find troubling or whatever, and I can find, oh, really? No kidding. Oh, my gosh, this is terrible. And then the next article, nah, completely different from what I just read, and it's frustrating for me to find the truth in there, and I'm almost curious at this point if there even is a real truth.
Well, this is a real difference between cable news and local news, because people do self-select for different cable products, MSNBC, CNN, and Fox, like you said, because they do have a different political orientation, all three of them. Local news viewers are not interested in that. They don't want to play that game. They don't watch local news to have their own political beliefs validated. They really just kind of want the facts, ma'am right. or sir.
Yeah.
And so that's why you don't see that at the local level. I mean, even, you know, like the local Fox television affiliate is not a conservative news outlet. I mean, insofar as, you know, it's not right wing, it's not an organ of the Republican Party, like some people accuse Fox News Channel of being. Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, there's no liberal local TV news station either. That being said, your first question was, how do I keep my bias out of a story? I don't, because we all have biases. We're all walking around with them. I don't think you'd want a news person that doesn't have an opinion on that stuff, right? I mean, you'd have to be pretty empty-headed, right, not to have an opinion about any particular story. So
I'm thinking maybe it would be less flavorful, but I would kind of rather just get the what happened, get
well,
the facts,
I think. I'm not saying that I use my bias to advance my belief in or my opinion on a given story. What I do is I'm mindful of my bias. In other words, if I'm doing a story that has two or three sides, and there is a definite, say, a conservative point of view and a liberal point of view, I have to be aware of that, and I have to understand where I fit into that, right?
Right.
Otherwise, I'm not being honest, or I can't approach this intelligently. So my job is to present a news report that fairly and accurately and really generally equally represents both points of view. You understand?
Yes.
Regardless of what I do. And so, in fact, a lot of times I think a good journalist will almost inadvertently overcompensate and give a slightly louder voice or to be absolutely clear that the point of view that is different from theirs gets a fair shot in that story. You follow me?
Yes, I think so. So you're going to have bias. There's no way really around it, but you have to acknowledge it and be honest about it.
Yes, yeah, which doesn't mean telling you what my bias is necessarily, because, again, people aren't interested in that. But for me to create a story that is balanced, I have to make sure I'm aware, self-aware of my own bias. Otherwise, it's going to be slanted, and I won't see it that way, right? Because, you know, people who have political opinions, they don't think they're biased. Nobody thinks
right.
they're biased. They think they're right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and just
yeah.
like me, I think I'm right
yes.
about these things. But I have to take that second step and say, well, my job is not a commentator to tell people what I think is right. My job is to present what both sides are saying. That's why you'll hear us say, Joe Blow says, you know, Janet Wilson says, we're attributing people's comments, mm-hmm. you know, and that's really crucial when you're doing a story that has any controversial component to it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think I was talking to Mayor Kreisman not too long ago. He came in, and he also mentioned that local politics doesn't really have that spin either. Like, you can be a Democrat or Republican. It doesn't really matter in local. So I guess it's kind of the same thing at a local level. So I wonder why it's as big of a deal on a national level.
Money.
Is that it? The only reason?
It's what drives it, I think. It's money in politics. It's kind of a zero-sum game. We've got a two-party system that has gotten...
But we don't have a two-party system. You can vote. There's, I think 40 people ran for president last time. Nobody did the research. They just put on the TV or read the newspaper. I'm never voting for a Democrat or Republican ever again.
You know what I'm saying. We have two parties dominate our political system. There's no denying that, as you know. And that's a problem. That's a problem. And, you know, both sides get money from the same people sometimes, you know. There's a lot of people that...
Sure. Even at the local level, that happens. My old boss used to give to both congressional candidates, throw them a couple $100 each, just in case he needed something at some point.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, that's just the way it works, you know.
Well, local politics, as I think you were alluding to, is about potholes and getting things done and utilities and sort of basic, you know, life issues. Whereas at the national level, you're dealing with gun rights and abortion and, you know, and deploying a military and relations with other countries and things like that. So it gets a lot stickier.
I wish that people cared more about local politics. I was asking my buddies, did you vote? Nah. Why not? It didn't.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is really the stuff that's going to affect your day-to-day. This is going to – what potholes get filled, you know, stuff like – this is really what's going to matter. Not so much this tug of war going on out here. That's a good, just good conversation starters. And
well, it's my belief, Will, that at some level, the system as it's being practiced is designed to discourage people from voting. They're not trying to win over votes so much as to suppress the vote of an opponent. Mm. That's what negative campaigning is all about. Negative campaigning doesn't tell anybody to vote for me. It's tearing down your candidate and making you maybe just unenthusiastic enough to just stay home on election day.
That's a good point. Yeah. You want to stick around for a little bit? We're almost up against the break already.
I got about 50 more minutes, something like that.
Okay. Do you have give out your social media and all that good
stuff?
Okay.
Yeah. You can find me at Brendan McLaughlin WFTS on Facebook. And my Twitter handle is at Brendan News. That's Brendan News.
All right. No Instagram, no Snapchats, not doing that thing?
You know, I'm not very active on that. I'm sorry to say.
Snapchat's really fun. You're a married guy, though. You don't want to get bumped
into
Snapchat.
Yeah, I don't know. Both my kids use these apps, but
they're fun. You can find me at facebook.com/HMB Radio. Check out James Bailey's My Mom's Favorite Podcast, facebook.com/My Mom's Favorite Podcast. Find me on Twitter, home_made_man. Same thing with Instagram and Snapchat. If you want to Snapchat me pictures of your butt, you can go ahead and do that at The Homemade Man. Brendan, thank you very much for coming in. You can catch more with him on HMB Sides a few more minutes. I'll put that up. Thank you, Radio St. Pete. Thank you, world, because this is worldwide after all. I think that's it. I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore. Have a good week, everybody. Talk to you soon. HMBRadio.com.